Hoyschav Gimel. She came by Hatsneya, the Chalkal Maisa Batovim, Kihu Avedas Hashem Yisborach, and Yipcheres Varutsuya Levonov. A person should do his Maisim in a way which is by Hatsneya. A person should not try to enforce his Maisim, because when he does it by Hatsneya, so then his focus is on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he does it in a way that people could see him, etc., it's almost impossible that a person that does it in that situation doesn't have some type of kavana, some type of intent that people should think that he's a good person, etc. And it takes away from the element of lishmo in the person's maisim. There's a mitzvah called tznius, and the mitzvah tznius is something which is sold quite short. Tznius is, in people's mind, is a halacha of how ladies are supposed to dress. That's about as much as it has practical applications in our lives. The Mor says in Makkos that Torah mitzvahs says bo micha v'midin al sholosh, that there's three things that is the foundation of the whole Torah. Is asos mishpat, avas chesed, asos mishpat, matznei alecha zim alekach. So one of the three foundations of the Torah is matznei alecha zim alekach. We don't know what it is even. We know what it avas chesed is. We know what asos mishpat is. What is it? Matznei alecha zim alekach. Revolva in Ali Shurik Helik Aleph, if you learn the Sefer, you realize that he wrote the Sefer as a sulam. There's the first shahr is the basic concepts, then the second shahr for his for Ben Tara is really developed. He's going to the second level. The third shahr is a person is truly being mispainen and understanding and moving forward. And the fourth shahr is for an accomplished Talmid Chacham as he goes through the different stages of his life. Likras Bayis, Likras Tafkid, finally gets to the Yom HaMavis, and the last parak of the whole Sefer is the Midot Tznius. Nilas HaShorim, he calls it. Nilas HaShorim, the apex of the void of the whole Sefer is to come to the Midot Tznius. And we still grapple with exactly what it is. The Moshul I used to be Masbrit, which I've used mentioned recently, but it's for those of you who are new, you're going to hear Mishalim from me, stories from me over and over again. I just want to tell you, before I do that, I want to tell you a story. We were in yeshiva. Mashira Gifta would say over certain maisim on a regular basis. Certain stories maisim would say, and he would say them again and again and again. He would say them again, and he would never apologize that he's saying them. He would say them with the same fervor that as the first time he said it. He would use the exact same words as the first time he said it. He would get excited at the same. Everything was exactly the same. And he was almost getting despoiled from it. So the comedian says the same joke 50 times. After a while, it's not funny anymore. So he used to think, he can't come up with a new maisa. He has to say over the same maisa over and over again. And that's what I used to think as a bacher. As I got older, I started to realize that I know every single one of those stories, word for word, inside and out, because I heard it 100 times. There's stories, some stories, without exaggeration, I heard over 50 times from the Shiva. I can picture my mind. I can picture him saying the story. So they sank in. So Sharma says that the goal isn't to say new things. I think one of the challenges we have with these Baruch Hashem nowadays is a lot of different storybooks coming out. And the biggest challenge with the storybooks is only reading one. There's Gishmak of stories, interesting. So you read one, two, three. By the time you finish, none of them made an impression on you. A person reads one, he thinks about it, he's abandoned it, says it over, and lets it sink in for a few days, it'll make a reshem on you. If it's again, and no, I have a story, nothing happened. You traded some stories, it's Gishmak, and that's a good time. It didn't impact you. So, you'll get used to me saying over my stories again and again and again. There's a Mishnah Novus. The Mishnah Novus says that Hakina v'atayra v'kavad mesinas adam min ha'erlam. It doesn't tell you which erlam it takes you out of. Following Moshe, and even though we try and stay away from Moshe with kings, because the problem with Moshe with kings means nothing to us nowadays, we don't have kings. But the story only works with a king, so we have to use a king. Moshe was a king, and this king was a wonderful person, absolutely wonderful person. He ruled over a tremendously wealthy nation, natural resources, and he had a tremendous wealth to himself, intelligent person, wise person, caring person, sagacious, and he was a person that he made himself available to the subjects of his kingdom. A regular the person could come in, any person in the kingdom could make an appointment with the king to meet with the king. Obviously, it took a long, very long period of time for you to get into the king. There was a little waiting list. So our friend over here decides he wants to make an appointment with the king. They give him an appointment 6 months hence. So it comes 6 months. You know, he's waiting. It's his day. He's there very, obviously very early, and he's all trembling, going into the presence of the king. Goes into the king. And whatever they've described to him doesn't come close to that experience. Tremendously intelligent person, wise person, understanding, focused in on him totally, totally focused in on him. And he came with a block of 4 hour blocks of time. So he had 4 hours, he could discuss whatever he wants. Let him pull out on the table all his issues. The king gave him advice. He gave him financial help. He gave him empathy. And he felt totally secure, totally with this world of just living with this king's total care, wrapping his arms around him. That's what he felt like. So while he's sitting there with the king, with this totally warm feeling. So, you know, he lives back in the town, so, you know, one of his friends knows he's in there by the king today. And, you know, they've been having this ongoing, you know, latest wagons, you know, get the latest Ford wagon, you know. So he beat him with a Chrysler now, so he beat him with a Cadillac. So he comes by with his Cadillac wagon with his four horses, you know. And he honks his horn as he goes by, and he should look out from the window and see, aha, I beat you. Because I couldn't care less. I feel so warm and so cared for and so such a good state of mind. You know, you can have it whatever you want. I really don't care. If a person lives with the awareness that we live in a Kodesh Baruch Hu's arms, and we're totally secure in his arms, and everything is taken care of, everything is taken care of. And we don't say that, but we live that. We live it in our minds and in our hearts. There's no kina. Because you can have whatever you want. It really doesn't bother me. I'm happy for you. I'm happy where I am. Covet? I need people's recognitions. What do I need people's recognition for? Covet is the search for recognition from other people. I want everybody needs, Rav Chatzkel said every person needs a spoonful of covet every day. A person has to feel that he's valuable. Covet is the statement that you're valuable. But where do you get your value from? You get your value from the people say you're a good person. That's the desire for covet. A person should get his value from, he knows he's a valuable person in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So a person who lives in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's arms knows that he's valuable. If anything, looking for you to give me covet is taking away from that focus of my real value that I have in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's arms. Taiva, that's a very distracting thing from the awareness of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a very distracting thing, taiva. Atina, akina, v'taiva, v'kavod, mesias, onam, min ha'erlam, the erlam which exists inside of our own neshamas. That's the erlam which we lose. There's a fascinating machshava that the Vilna Gaon brings down from Chaim Vital. If you look at the Seres HaDibros, and I ask you, which one of the Seres HaDibros is the most important of the Seres HaDibros, which one of the Seres HaDibros is the one which includes all of the other Seres HaDibros, he would tell me, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And he says, no. It's the mitzvah of Lo Yisachmod. Because Lo Yisachmod is impossible to live, truly live Lo Yisachmod, unless you live in this world that I just described. And that's the goal of the Kol Torah Kulam, the Vilna Gaon says. That's the mitzvah called Bitochen. Bitochen means that the person feels totally secure and safe in the hands of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the world of Bitochen. Anochi Hashem Elokecha is the concept the lamaisa to live with it is the world of lo sachmir. That's the meat of tznius. In that world, I have so much inside of me. I don't want to be megalit because I'm afraid it's going to. I'm going to lose that focus. It's so valuable to me what I have that we want to handle it with care. The more I talk about it, the more I show it off, the more I'm losing focus of that fact that I'm with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the world of tznius is the world of a person who's so enveloped in the world of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's arms that he's uncomfortable being megala himself. Because why would you want to do that? That's a focus on all the human beings. That's a focus on the world around you. Obviously, we have to be aware of the world around us because we care other people, etc. But we're not that they should be the ones who validate me. I shouldn't define myself by somebody else. One of the Rishonim one time said, he says that a person who runs after COVID is the biggest Avodah Zarah in the whole world. Why? Because he bows down to the whole world. Every person in the world has power over him. If he thinks I'm a good guy, then I'm a good guy. If not, I'm not a good guy. So I'm meshubah to the Gansa Bria. I just saw a story, and you know, to bring it home, it's two stories. That just, you know, these are extreme stories, but it's like, you know, it's just like so powerful. I get the email from Yonos Rosenblum. See, sent out the email before Rosh Hashanah about a story that the social experiment that the Washington Post did about 2 years ago, and it was about this violinist who they stick him into one of the world's top violinists with one of the world's most precious violins playing one of the most greatest pieces of violin music. And the test was to see, well, people appreciate beauty not in the normal setting. They put him into a metro station during the Monday morning rush hour, and they videotaped to see how many people would stop and listen to the music. And they dressed him up, you know, in a t-shirt and a Nationals baseball cap, you know. He doesn't look like, you know, some special guy. And they have this guy sitting there, and they have a videotape of 45 minutes playing straight, a $3.5 million Stradivarius violin, playing one of the pieces of violin music which is considered one of the best pieces of violin music which exists. And he's one of the top violinists of the world. He actually came to Washington the next night. He's going to go to Kennedy Center. They're giving him an award for being one of the best violinists in the world. And he's standing in this subway station over there, you know, looking like with his violin case open and people throwing in some money, you know. He made $32 for the 45 minutes that he was there. And their experiment was to see how many people would stop, and they, according to the videotape they counted afterwards, that over 1,090 people walked by him in those 45 minutes. Seven people stopped to listen. The one who stayed the longest was a 4-year-old child who wanted to stay, but his mother kept schlepping him away. To finally, the mother yanked him away. And I guess the result of the experiment they wanted to see was that people don't appreciate beauty unless it's given to them in the right set. Rabbi Rosenblum's point was, you have a Talmud Chacham knocks on your door, you know, that's a Sri Yerushalayim, there's this person sitting in yeshiva. And, you know, he gets up to say it's Russia, and there's thousands of people listening to him, and he comes to you knocking your door, he's the Chacham HaShuluch, you give him, you know, he tells you a word, I heard the word already. You know, that was his point, you know. I the last Ketamah to say a word, right? You know, that was his point. But in the actual story, is a fascinating thing. This fellow's name is Joshua Bell. So Joshua Bell, in the actual story, he says that when he was talking about it afterwards, he was discussing it, he says he was nervous before he did it. They asked him, why are you nervous when you get up to play? He said, I'm not nervous when I get up to play. So why were you nervous this time? He says, when I go into the hall to play, I've been validated before I start, because everybody bought tickets to listen to me. His average ticket, the cheapest ticket to buy to listen to him is $100. That's the cheapest ticket you can get to listen to him. And, you know, obviously some of them are much more expensive. So people have paid at least $100 to walk in. It's a full house with, you know, 1,000 people, 2,000 people listening to me. They all validated me before I started. But over here, I had no idea whether they're going to validate me. I'm thinking to myself, you know, Rebbeinu Shlomo, the fellow's here in Washington to receive an award as one of the best violinists in the world. and he's nervous about how some yokel is going to walk by him in the subway station and think about it. Who cares what the yokel thinks about you in the subway station? But that's how regish we are to COVID. That's how sensitive we are to somebody else's opinion of us. That it bothers me what this guy, which I'm never going to see again, thinks about me. And we're all guilty of this. You know, you walk into the, you know, and this, you know, and you're also frum because, you know, the guy will think that you're too frumed. I mean, who can we think? What do you care what the guy thinks about you? Why are you defining yourself by him? Why are you giving him power over you? Okay, you know, this person is a performer. Performers are very much, they live on what people think about them. But we all have that problem. We all have that challenge. We all have the challenge that we define ourselves. You should never define yourself by anybody else. That they should not have the power over you to define what your value. Your value, because in Kodesh Baruch Hu's eyes, you're valuable. And a person who's a true tsunua is a person who has been able to absorb into himself that lesson that the definition of myself is not an external definition. It's an internal definition to myself and my Creator. And once a person has it, there's no warmer place in the world to exist than that. It's a totally warm place. And that's the world of Bitochen. The Bali Aveda over the generations, many times you have, you know, the Lama of Tzaddikim, you know, you have these people, they, it was painful for them to become Nisgal. They were much happier when they weren't. And there were stories about different people which Nisgal, and shortly afterwards they were Nifter. They couldn't live in that world. It was so painful for them. So the person's avoida is to move slowly, slowly, slowly. Obviously, it's not. It's the end of. It's the end. It's the ilus hashorim. It's the climax of a person's life. The ability to get to that madrega, that my awareness of Kadosh Baruch Hu was so powerful that I only wanted to find myself by Him and not by anything else. People are very important because I care about people. But people are not important that I define myself by what they think about me. Should have goes out. Tell you two stories. I have this Ohara. I told you this before. Rissel Salanter, originally his plan, his Rebbe Reb Zunda was a Nister. He wanted to be a Nister because he could focus on the Kodesh Baruch Hu much better as a Nister. So Rissel Salanter decided to be a Nister. So in order to be a Nister, he realized that, you know, you can't be caught learning because then people know that you're learning. You know, so he wanted to be. So he memorized Shas, Bal Peh, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, etc., verbatim, word for word. So he never needed to open a sefer because this way it would be hidden. You know, he never would. You know, he could learn constantly without people to see him. Second thing he did is he learned that, you know, you can't down a long Shmoneh Esrei, you know, very intense Shmoneh Esrei, if you want to be like a nobody. So he learned how to compress his very intense emotions of Shmoneh Esrei into a very quick Shmoneh Esrei and a very, very, very. Non-external type of Shemoneh Esrei. He's a very, you know, done, you know. And really, he was mechaven, like, you know, way beyond what our Nila looks like. Then he realized, he said that, you know, that later on in his life, he realized that Kadosh Baruch Hu needed a different type of approach for the generation. He needed to move the generation to the world of Musar, because Klaiso needed it. So he changed his approach. So I remember reading this piece, and I'm saying to myself, you know, if I were in those Shas, Bal Peh, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, etc., I would guarantee. I can promise you, I would make sure that you would know that. You'd ask me kasha, and I said, "Yeah, it's a kasha." No, I remember there's Tosfos and Tzvachim, and, you know, and the Kuf Aleph from there, the bottom. He talks about the kasha. I just like throw it in, like I throw it a Tosfos over here, a Rashi over there, a Gemara over here, and you eventually get the picture. I know Shas, because it'd be important to me that you know that I know Shas. He didn't want people to know that he knows Shas. It was painful for him for people to know that he knows Shas. Rishon Salanter was, the Reb Chaim Brisker said he was the three biggest Gaonim in the generation before him, before Reb Chaim. So one of the three biggest Gaonim in the generation was Rishon Salanter. He wasn't known as a big Talmud Chacham. He's known as a big Tzaddik. He didn't want to be known as a big Talmud Chacham. He was megal himself only as much as necessary to be able to support his stature that he had a right to teach about Musar. But anything beyond that, the only time of the year he was able to gal himself was on Purim. His understanding of the halacha of Adul Yoda was that he called it, it was the bechina shel guf. How will the guf function when the mind is not in control? You're drunk enough that the mind is not in control, how will the guf function? Well, what happened was, on Purim, he couldn't control himself, and he would talk the Divrei Torah. Like, anything. You could ask him a kasha, anything you want, and he would talk about it, because he wasn't in control. His self-control was lost, and now it came out, all of the godless from his self-control came out on Purim. That's what Purim is supposed to look like, by the way. That's the goal of Purim, to let the true being of yourself come out, which is good. Now, if you think the true being of yourself is not good, probably shouldn't get drunk on Purim. It's a different issue. Because then what's going to come out is not something which is necessarily so good. But assuming what's inside is very good, the goal is, you know, that you let that part out. So that was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's, you know, goal. Refrain Waxman says over a story that he was flying somewhere and gets on the plane, sits down next to this fellow, and you know, they put him in first class, whatever, you know, good. So next to this guy, so he sits down, he opens up his safer, and he's reading his safer, and the fellow says to him, like after a few minutes, the fellow interrupts, and he says, "My name is so-and-so." He says, "Oh, nice to meet you, my name is Efraim Waxman." Goes back to his safer. He says, do you know who I am?" He says, "No." Goes back to his safer. He says, "You know, I'm a musician, I play music." He says, "Oh, that's very nice." Goes back to his safer. "So you know, I put out some albums." "Oh, that's very nice." Goes back to his safer. Actually, some of them have been platinum albums, as a matter of fact. He says, "Wow, that's really nice." Goes back to his safer. "So you know, I play in front of, you know, concerts. Probably there's a total of 1 million people in a year hear my concerts." He says, "Wow, that's really nice." Goes back to his safer. "Would you like my autograph?" He says, "No, thank you." He says, "No, really, give me my autograph." He says, "You know, well, it's not very nice of you, but no, thank you." The guy was some rock star, right? And he couldn't. It was painful for the guy that somebody didn't want his autograph. Now, there's 1 million people who came to listen to him over the year. That's what he just said. And we can imagine every one of them wanted his autograph. But there's this one Meshuggah-looking yid next to him. He said, "Come on, listen, I don't need it." And it drove him crazy. He says, "No, I'll give it to you." So he takes out a piece of paper and says, "Dear Ephraim, nice to get to know you. Best of luck, sign so-and-so." And I'm sure Rabbi Waxman, you know, cherished it very much the rest of his life. Mr. Salanter, one end. Where do we fit in the picture? So the last piece of the Chazkan L'Rosh is your goal. This is the goal. The goal in life is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is so real to you. And you live with that reality. You live in the world of Pitochim. You live in the world that Kadosh Baruch Hu is so real that it's a warm place. This world is a very warm place when Kadosh Baruch Hu is real. Because whatever happens, Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing it. And you're in his arms. Chaim Shalevitz says that, says Pshat in the Gemara. It's awesome Pshat in the Gemara. This is Klai Yisrael in the Midbar. He says, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yossi Shiti is, it's a Gemara. It's a Lomdus, a Gemara. Lomdus, a Gemara. It's not a Shekel Gadata. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Shiti is that the Malach of Boina is only Chayiv, only Chayiv, if you do Stira, Amanas Livnois bin Kaimai. Let's say I take apart a house because I want to use the materials to rebuild a house somewhere else. Not Chayiv. The only time it's Chayiv is Soyser. If he's Soyser, Amanas to rebuild right here. So the Gemara says, 1 second. The whole makor for the Malach of Soysers on the Mishkan. Where were they Soysers on the Mishkan? When they traveled from Mokum A to Mokum B, they did Stira. To be able to move the Mishkan from place A to place B. So by definition, the Malach of Soysers was Amanas Livus Shlomim Kaimai. So what are you telling me that the Malach is only Amanas Livus Bin Kaimai? It's almost the opposite. Every single Stira in the Midbar was Badafka, not Amanas Livus Bin Kaimai. So more answers, Kivin Tziv Al Piyashem Yisov, Piyashem Yachno, Kamanas Livus Bin Kaimai Dami. That's the more answer. So the Chaim Shalevitz says, a woman gets onto the bus in Tel Aviv. She's carrying her baby. I ask you, where is the baby? And the answer is, the baby is in its mother's arms. The bus now drives to Yerushalayim, and we ask you, where is the baby? And the answer is, the baby is in its mother's arms. No, the baby was in Tel Aviv and now it's in Yerushalayim. No, the baby is in its mother's arms. That's where a baby is found. That's what the Gemara said. It started out in the mother's arms, ended up in the mother's arms. The physical reality wasn't the defining element of the relationship of where the baby is. The child is found in its mother's arms. And that's, it went from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim, but where it was found was in the mother's arms. After Gemara, the Klai Yisrael in the Midbar lived Al Pi Hashem. The physical reality wasn't the definition of what Klai Yisrael was. Al Pi Hashem Yisrael, Al Pi Hashem Yachon, where did they live? They lived in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's arms. David HaMelech says, "Kikimula la'imi." My relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm mamish in my mother's arms. That's a relationship with what a human being, a Klal Yisrael, can have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's, you understand that that relationship creates such a reality, such a sweetness in your life. Creates such a reality in your life. That the Madrega of Avodah Hashem you can accomplish with that is tremendous. Because you're constantly moving forward. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is there to hold your hand. You move, you move, you move, and you move. And if somebody would interrupt that, it's painful. That's what that is the nechus. That is what Klal Yisrael owns. I just say like this, you know, I think the whole year, the avoid of a person, we're very aware of what's around us. And Yom Kippur, a person is able to tap into that. Yom Kippur is able to tap in, you know what? Focus on the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Person in Yom Kippur, he gets into the davening, he gets into the, you know, and you just think the focus is on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that the reality of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the yam of rachamim of Yom Kippur. It's a yam of, it's Hashem's arms around Klal Yisrael, rachamim. It's Hashem's arms around Klal Yisrael. A person can touch that, and that when a person touches that, it's like it changes his whole look and life. And that's our avodah, to touch into that world, to touch into that world, at least touch it. And if you touch it, you can build from that. That the different, the next year you build is it's not just a quantitative difference, it's a qualitative difference.